Hi everyone, Pamela Larg here, your host of the Energy Transitions podcast. If you enjoy listening to our bi-weekly podcast, make sure to hit the subscribe button and take a moment to leave a rating or review wherever you're listening. This will help us spread the message and connect with our community. Thanks again for listening to the Energy Transitions podcast from Enlit and Friends. The discourse around nuclear energy has changed a great deal over the past few years, with more governments and industry realizing the potential of the power source to decarbonize our energy system. The question is, does nuclear power fit into our future energy mix? And what would that role look like in terms of big builds or small modular reactors? To answer these questions and to provide some practical insights into how the industry needs to adjust to become future-proof, I am joined by Dr. Sama Bilbao-Ilion, Director General of the World Nuclear Association. We talk about the work that is needed from across the public and private sectors to develop a robust supply chain and ecosystem, as well as what needs to be done to ensure a diverse workforce is available to sustain development. I'm your host, Pamela Larg, and this episode of the Energy Transitions podcast is brought to you in partnership with World Energy Council in the lead up to the 2024 World Energy Congress, taking place in Rotterdam from 22 to 25 April. Sama, you became Director General of the World Nuclear Association in 2020. How has the discourse around nuclear energy changed since then?
Yes, as you said, I joined World Nuclear Association at the end of 2020, which were very complex times, as you know, because we were in the middle of COVID. Well, clearly, any new adventure such as this is a little bit crazy to do it in the middle of COVID. And you're right. Luckily, I think for nuclear, the way nuclear is perceived and understood has radically changed in the last 3.5 years since I've been in this role. So first of all, there is much more appreciation and recognition of the role of nuclear energy today, and obviously for the last 50 plus years. So countries and I would say media and also the average person down in the street, they really are recognizing the role of nuclear as it's happening. But also there is much more appetite, if you wish, for new nuclear. People are seeing how nuclear has a very important role to play moving forward. So yeah, our role, which has always been to educate and advocate for nuclear and to actually connect the nuclear industry, the demand of what we do has really multiplied exponentially, really, in the last few years.
Perhaps this is a tough question, but the sector is notorious for lengthy builds and costly builds, and we need to go green at pace. How does nuclear deliver its net zero promises?
You know, I think that I'm going to reframe that question because I don't know that is actually true that nuclear is more lengthy or more costly than other green energy infrastructure. In fact, if you look at the history, the fastest decarbonization has been achieved with nuclear energy, in France in the 70s and 80s, in Sweden, in Spain, in the UAE in the last 12, 14 years. So nuclear can and is a potential fast decarbonization source. And I think that perhaps, well, you know, sometimes not very successful projects, they are very good headlines in the news. And, you know, the boring ones that go on time, on budget, those are really not very much on the headlines. So there are many examples of projects that are moving very quickly. You know, China starts 6 to 10 reactors every year. I mean, it's probably not very much in the news. I mean, we are seeing a lot of successful projects in South Korea. They do this at home and they just did it in the United Arab Emirates. We are seeing very successful on-time projects. For example, Bangladesh. Bangladesh is going to start their first nuclear power plant this year, 2024. And this has been less than 10 years from zero to 10% of their electricity. So the long story short to me is that we really need to look at the entire nuclear industry and see that, in fact, nuclear is and can be on time, on budget, and could be a very, very important and contributor to decarbonizing at the speed and the scale that we need.
You know, you mentioned some of the projects that will come online. Will we see more big, bold nuclear? Or do you think we're going to see an uptake of the smaller, perhaps more modular or decentralized nuclear projects?
You know, as I just said, the size of the challenge that we have in front of us is enormous. So maybe we'll discuss later how we are promoting that we do need to triple at least global nuclear capacity by 2050 if we are serious about meeting Paris Agreement goals in a cost-effective and equitable manner. So if you think about this, about tripling global nuclear capacity, we are talking about 40 gigawatts of new nuclear every year for the next 25 years. And of course, you and I know that the problem doesn't end in 2050. I mean, we really need to continue afterwards. So the way we look at this is 40 gigawatts of new nuclear, we think is going to be a lot of large nuclear reactors and also a few small modular reactors, quite a few. I think that we are going to see probably in many countries, many large reactors. I mean, we are already seeing this in Europe. If you look at the many projects that are on the works already in Europe, in France, in Sweden, in Central and Eastern European countries, a lot of it is large nuclear because there is an enormous demand. And as I say, it is in 5 years, you can add, 1,000 or 1,200 gigawatts of carbon-free energy. So that's very, very good. But I think that what these small reactors bring is a different delivery model. So we can use this perhaps in places where they don't have a very robust grid. For example, we are looking at Southeast Asia. We are looking at Africa. So these small reactors can help to build the grid gradually. So you don't need to add 1,000 gigawatts in one chunk. We may add 100 or 200 or 300, and then you can build the grid at the same time. And then when you need more, you can put another smaller reactor or something else. Also, they can be very good to decarbonize the entire economy. So it's not just electricity. Okay. Remember that we also need to decarbonize transportation. We need to decarbonize industry. We need to decarbonize heating and cooling. So large reactors, but in particular small modular reactors, can be very well customized for these industrial applications. For example, you know, process heat for many industries, or district heating if you want to decarbonize heating and cooling in a given neighborhood. Or, for example, something that is very important, in particular in Africa and the Middle East, the production of fresh water. So we can use small reactors and large reactors for desalination. So I truly believe that there will be a large deployment of all kinds of reactors of every size.
What I'm understanding as you're talking, Sama, is just that nuclear has a very important role to play in the future energy mix alongside renewable energy and hydrogen. And it really will have a home in our future energy mix.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that we all need to be very clear that for the future clean energy mix, it needs to be diverse. We are going to really need to have, obviously, renewables as much as we can fit. And obviously, this is going to depend on the different countries and the different, natural endowments that different countries have. But yeah, so nuclear has a very important role to play in this diverse energy mix because, frankly, today is I don't want to say perhaps the only one, but one of the few technologies that can produce abundant, affordable 24/7, that is fully dispatchable carbon-free energy. So this is going to be a very good complement, obviously, to wind and solar that are not dispatchable. So we are going to have this backbone of 24/7 energy supporting the growth of renewables. And also, as you said, I mean, if we are going to use more hydrogen, clearly it is more cost effective to use fixed base load to actually have these hydrolyzers that are going to produce the hydrogen going 24/7. And frankly, I do believe that we still are going to see, certainly for a while, some natural gas in the grids. So certainly, for example, nuclear energy could be very important to help decarbonize the scope 1 and 2 of using natural gas, to also balance the grid. So I really think that including nuclear in this energy mix is going to be very good for the entire, for all the energy sources. I mean, this is not a competition that one only technology can win. No technology can do this by itself.
We live in a world where there's a lot of geopolitical tension. Soma, talk to us a little bit about some of these geopolitical threats and how we develop nuclear in such a politically unstable and risky landscape.
Well, nuclear energy, as you know, has always been very aware of security and safety, of course. So this is, I would say, a boundary condition when we develop nuclear technology. So this is obviously a condition that needs to be met. So nuclear power plants are, as you know, are very hardened facilities. They are very well designed to. Traditionally, they were very well designed to withstand major natural impacts, you know, like storms or tornadoes or earthquakes or things like that. And obviously, that is very, very helpful because it can also withstand some of these other man-made threats that we are seeing right now. But at the same time, I would say that nuclear energy is perhaps no different than all these other energy sources. I mean, you know that we have seen, unfortunately, how other energy facilities have been targeted. We've seen dams destroyed with enormous loss of life, but also loss of the infrastructure and enormous environmental consequences. Or we've seen other energy infrastructure targeted. So I really think that because we've always, from the beginning, as we design nuclear facilities, security and safety, they are inherent in the design of nuclear facilities. Perhaps we are in a better place, if you wish, than perhaps other facilities that didn't really have this from the start.
It's interesting because even though other energy infrastructure is also being targeted, there's almost an association with nuclear power that there's something a lot more risky, a lot more dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if our mindsets are really geared around identifying the risks of nuclear, when in actual fact, it's as risky or as safe as any other energy infrastructure.
Yeah, you are completely correct. I think that, well, for decades, perhaps, you know, popular culture and certainly many, well, there's a strong anti-nuclear group of people that have been very effective communicating in nuclear. And perhaps we, the industry, have been not very effective. So it's a two-side problem. But you're completely right. I mean, if you look at the safety of nuclear technologies compared with all other forms of producing electricity, and that does include wind and solar and, of course, fossil fuels or hydropower or others, nuclear actually is the safest. I mean, and unfortunately, as you very well know, we typically measure this safety in fatalities per kilowatt hour produced, which is not a very good way to measure anything, but okay, it is what it is. And you're right. Nuclear is the lowest, the one with the lowest fatalities per kilowatt hour produced. So I think that we really need to work to put in perspective the true risks that nuclear energy brings compared to other energy sources, and also the true benefits. I mean, we really need to put both things in a balanced level playing field for people to be able to make judgment of how it all fits together.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I've been doing a lot of reading about some of the innovation within nuclear, which I find so exciting. You know, we've got these robot dogs, for example, that are going out and helping with decommissioning and waste management. It seems as if the sector has made such incredible advancements, whether it's through digitalization and AI or robotics, to really become a safe industry, even when it comes to waste management and decommissioning. Talk to us a little bit about some of that innovation.
Yeah, I think that the nuclear industry, like all of the other industries, I believe, we really are trying to make the most of all this innovation and all these new technologies that are coming into the fold, and trying to incorporate them to continue enhancing safety and security as much as possible and needed, but also to make nuclear power plants more cost effective, more effective. So you mentioned the use of AI, the use of digital technologies, advanced manufacturing, and maybe many new advanced materials that are being used to make nuclear technology more cost effective, to perhaps deploy these units faster, to understand better how we are operating them, and learn from the best practices to operate these units even better, et cetera. And also, I would say that when we are looking at the used nuclear fuel, which in my mind is one of the use nuclear fuel and nuclear waste, I think this is one of the two things that make nuclear energy, well, a very good, very good news, because what we are doing is from the very beginning having this closed circular economy, trying to make sure that we make the most of the resources that we have. So all those technologies that are helping us maximize the energy that is stored in nuclear fuel are very important. So, like, for example, you know that currently not in many countries we recycle used nuclear fuel. So currently in many countries we simply store it as it is, and that's just the way it's been done. But we are already using these advanced technologies in France, in Russia, Japan, the UK, for example. We are recycling, reprocessing this used nuclear fuel, because it has already 95% of it is the original material that can be recycled and reused in the nuclear reactors. Some in nuclear reactors that we are using today, but also the next generation of nuclear reactors. So this innovation, I think that is going to be essential to, number one, minimize the use of raw materials, say uranium, that we are using, but also to minimize the amount of ultimate waste that needs to be disposed because of nuclear facilities.
Well, it seems to me that these innovations make it possible for us to aim for our nuclear targets. I mean, you mentioned how many gigawatts we're aiming for in the future, mm-hmm. by 2050. So that's very encouraging for me. But Sama, I want to ask you specifically about the Net Zero Nuclear Initiative. Tell us, what is that initiative about?
Yeah, so the Net Zero Nuclear Initiative is something that we initiated last year. The idea was to have a very strong visibility for nuclear energy at COP28. So this was an initiative jointly started by World Nuclear Association together with our colleagues of the Emirates Nuclear Energy Corporation, ENEC. Obviously, they were the home team. Obviously, as you know, COP28 took place in Dubai. And our goal was to really bring together, obviously, the nuclear industry together with governments and together with civil society to illustrate and bring visibility to the important role of nuclear energy in the context of climate change and sustainability. So we wanted to do this in a very pragmatic way, and this is why we set this goal of tripling our global nuclear capacity by 2050. So that is the tangible, very visible goal that we are doing. And as you know, we already have 25 countries that have publicly and boldly stated that they want to contribute and help achieve that goal. And again, we do continue to do this. So the Net Zero Nuclear Initiative, the aim is to continue this initiative moving forward. So we started for COP28, but we continue to work on this for COP29, COP30, and well, hopefully at one point we can achieve success and we say that we are on track to meet Paris Agreement goals, and perhaps there won't be any more COPs. But in the meanwhile, while we have those, we plan to continue bringing nuclear to the global dialogue towards decarbonization, towards energy security, towards, you know, affordability and inclusion, you know, equity, making sure that everybody has enough energy to have the quality of life that you and I enjoy today. So that's the goal. And one of the things that we, World Nuclear Association, are doing is actually keeping track on how successful we are in achieving this goal. So it's not just, oh yeah, we are going to triple global nuclear capacity, which, yes, it is an ambitious and as we discussed earlier, hard, it will be hard to actually achieve this goal. But what we are trying to do is work with governments, with the finance community, within the industry, to actually put in place what is needed to achieve this goal. And perhaps I will tell you very quickly what it is. So obviously, the fact that we do have now a lot of support and visibility from governments is helping us with energy policies that include nuclear in the same level playing field as other carbon-free technologies. And also, I think we are working with governments and the industry to translate these energy policies into industrial policies, because now we really need to develop the industrial infrastructure, the industrial capabilities, the supply chain, the workforce that is going to be needed to deliver all this clean energy. Nuclear, wind, solar, geothermal, everything else. So I really think that it's not just a nuclear supply chain, it's a clean energy supply chain. Also, we are working with the finance community to make sure that nuclear energy is included in all these sustainable finance and climate finance frameworks. So basically the carbon-free and sustainability capabilities and features of nuclear are fully recognized within those frameworks, and also trying to incentivize investment in nuclear projects. And I think it's important to educate the finance community that when we are looking at nuclear projects, it's not just new nuclear energy, nuclear power plants. There is the entire ecosystem of nuclear, from uranium mining opportunities to investing in the refurbishment of existing facilities so we can extend as much as feasible the life of existing facilities, or of course, as I just said, the industrial infrastructure, the entire supply chain of nuclear. And then the last thing that I will say that is very important is the optimization, the streamlining of the regulatory frameworks, the licensing framework for nuclear facilities, which is, again, not different than the challenges that other industries are experiencing, wind and solar, with permitting, for example, accelerating the speed at which some of these projects come into fruition. So from the nuclear point of view, we are working together with the regulators the regulators in most countries are fully aware that they are a key piece of the puzzle, that they really need to optimize and work together with the industry to accelerate, obviously without cutting any corners, the way in which we license and regulate these projects. So, and also a lot of international collaboration, right? So that when a project is licensed in country A, the same project or the same type of design can be easily licensed in country B or country Z or country D. So a lot of international collaboration. So these are some of the things that we are working within the context of the Net Zero Nuclear Initiative. But of course, these are the bread and butter of the work that World Nuclear Association has been doing for the last many decades.
That is a lot of work that you are busy with.
That is a lot of work.
Wow. Well, thank you for taking us through that. And, you know, it does lead me on to my next question. You touched very briefly on the issue around workforce. And obviously, we are trying to build this nuclear ecosystem, but we need a workforce to maintain it and keep it going. Do we have the workforce available? And I think more specifically, is it diverse and inclusive enough?
Very important. I mean, I think that nuclear, and I would say just as much as other clean energy technologies, we really are, we are challenged right now on finding the amount of professionals that we need to scale at the speed that is needed. So, yes, we do need to, I mean, and this is in my mind part of these industrial policies that I was talking before. So working together with the academic community, the educational community to incentivize, to inspire young people to go into nuclear careers. Some of them are going to be the traditional engineering careers. I mean, yes, we do need nuclear engineers, but actually we need all kinds of engineers. We need civil engineers, electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, all kinds of engineers, not only for nuclear, but for all clean energy technologies. But we also need economists. We need lawyers. We need project managers. We need all these technicians that are going to be doing a lot of the technical everyday work. We need welders. We need construction workers that are going to build all these facilities. So we are working on that. I mean, there is, as an industry, we are putting together a little bit of a strategic plan of what are the needs, trying to incentivize, to encourage, to inspire these people to get into nuclear. And I think that the one thing that is good news that I really like to link with this equity aspect, you know, as we move towards a clean energy future, this means that some people that are currently working on the oil and gas industry, the coal industry, those people perhaps, well, they are looking at losing their jobs or their economic opportunities. So the good news to me is that the skills and the knowledge and the experience that all those people have are very transferable, certainly to nuclear for sure, and to perhaps other clean energy technologies. So I think that one of the things that we are doing is trying to reskill and retrain many of these people to move towards nuclear. And then you were talking about making sure that we have an inclusive and, well, gender balanced workforce. So I think that right now that's not the case. I think that definitely there is much work to be done in nuclear, and I would say in many other STEM sectors. I think that the nuclear industry is also working to become much more inclusive. I mean, because it's not just trying to attract lots of women, you really need to retain them. So I think that we are working very hard to make sure that our sector is perceived by women as inclusive, as a sector in which women can have a successful career with growth opportunities where the skills of women can be fully recognized. And as you know, this is an area where I'm very excited. I mean, I was just recently, I think it was 2 weeks ago on March 8th, which was International Women's Day, I was very, very happy to sign an agreement with Director General Rafael Mariano Grossi of the International Atomic Energy Agency, because we wanted to work together to incentivize the engagement of women into the global nuclear industry. So Rafael has been incredibly proactive to excite and engage women into nuclear careers, but perhaps there was a missing link to actually bring those women, connect them with these actual opportunities. So Rafael and I talked and we put together this agreement to try to close a little bit this gap. But again, lots of work to happen in all the clean energy technology sectors. So I think that nuclear is really no different than many other sectors.
Indeed, that is very exciting news. And hopefully we can see through this collaboration with the International Atomic Energy Agency, we can really see women starting to get involved in the sector and hopefully even out that disparity. Salma, I wanted to ask you a more personal question. Was there a moment where you felt particularly inspired in your life to work in nuclear? Was this something you always wanted to do?
You know, I am one of those, I don't know if rare people, but typically whenever you ask people that are in the nuclear industry, often they tell you about this aha moment where they converted to nuclear or something like that. I'm pretty boring because I've always wanted to be a nuclear engineer. So, okay, maybe rephrase that. So I always wanted to work in energy. I always wanted to be an engineer. So my degree in Spain is in energy technologies. And that's what I wanted to do. And very quickly, I zero into nuclear because it became clear to me from early on my career, I mean, my opinion, that it was probably the energy technology with more pros and less cons. I mean, none of them is perfect, obviously, but clearly that's what happened to me. So I always wanted to work in nuclear, and luckily my career has been very diverse. As you know, I work in industry. I was a professor and I developed an academic nuclear engineering program. And then I've worked in international organizations, you know, from a more top-down policy and advocacy point of view. But I've been super lucky to meet a number of incredible mentors that have helped me to move up in my career. They have inspired me. They have challenged me. They have given me opportunities. You know, when they say, oh, I have an opportunity for you, it's like, oh my gosh. So opportunities that are challenges. And I would say that also I've been very proactive myself, being a good mentor for other people. And I will tell you that many times some of the more inspiring moments and more many of these aha moments are with people that are up and coming. And I'm learning from them almost as much as I, or perhaps even more than I learn from mentors or more experienced people that I had.
That does sound wonderful indeed. And I can hear the passion in your voice. Mm-hmm. I know that you will be speaking at World Energy Congress and hopefully sharing some of your insights and passions there. What will be the focus of your session?
Yeah, no, I'm very excited to be at the World Energy Congress because I think it's very important that we are finally bringing nuclear energy in the mainstream, that we are actually talking about nuclear energy at the same time as we talk about all other clean energy technologies. So you know, I am very, very happy to be in a diverse panel where we are going to bring nuclear into the mainstream conversation. And of course, yes, we will also have nuclear focused sessions where we will discuss in detail the intricacies of the nuclear energy. And then maybe I will tell you one thing that I'm very excited about, because we are going to be also at the World Energy Congress hosting a special side event together with the United Nations Economic Commission for Europe and Electric Power Research Institute. And this is going to be focused on building a resilient electricity system. I think that, you know, sometimes we focus too much on decarbonization, which is obviously very important, but we need to make sure that we actually are building systems that are resilient and that provide access to everybody. So I am also excited about this session that I think is going to be on Wednesday at 8 a.m. We can have some discussions and some conversations with all the people that come to chat about this important topic.
That sounds wonderful. I know we'll definitely be following all of the news that comes out of that session. So thank you so much, Summer, for joining me today and for sharing your insights.
Thank you, Pamela. It's been a pleasure. And I look forward to seeing you in Rotterdam and obviously to talk to you and everybody else that is going to be there. I think the World Energy Congress is going to be a great opportunity to bring together global thought leaders to really accelerate this transition towards clean energy systems.
Absolutely. Sama, thank you. And thank you so much to our listeners. Until next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions Podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Larg, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.